Ben Franklin might be spitting in his grave. Pity the poor penny. This is the Focus Group.
They're all business, except when they're not. It's the Focus Group with Tim Bennett and John Nash.
Welcome to the Focus Group. John Nash here with my good friend and co-host, Tim Bennett. FocusGroupRadio.com is our website. You can find all about us there, including our partner Deep Discount, who we're going to be visiting with later in the podcast. And you'll also learn about TFG Unbuttoned, our companion podcast to the Focus Group, which drops on Tuesdays in audio-only form. So, Mr. Bennett, I teased a story that we are going to be going over in Shop Talk later in the show, and that's about the penny. Pity the poor penny. I didn't know that Benjamin Franklin
penny
actually...
Penny pity party.
Ben Franklin was the guy that started the penny.
Was he?
I think so, yeah.
Penny saved is a penny earned.
But there you go, right?
Isn't that what he said? Penny saved is a penny earned. Mm-hmm. That's why I always see a penny, I'll pick it up. Do you pick it up?
Only if it's heads up.
Oh, so you're superstitious.
and as long as it's not under a ladder and a black cat hasn't crossed my path, I'll pick up the penny if it's face up, yeah.
Which reminds me, you know, I you and I both shop at Aldi, and I have an Aldi story later, but, you know, the quarter thing. So I don't know if they do this upstate where you are, but, you know, when you hand the card off to somebody, some people will take your quarter. Mm-hmm. Some people won't. I usually don't. I'm like, oh, just take it. You know, I'm not some little old lady. I don't need your quarter. Mm-hmm. But there's some people, they insist on getting their quarter. And at that point, I'm just like, oh, I'll just go get it myself. Is there a handoff with the carts up there?
Sometimes. One time I think he gave a quarter to somebody and he's like, he's going to go use that to buy drugs. I'm like, a very small amount with a quarter. Very small amount. Just as a weird thing crossed my radar on Friday, I think it was, day after Valentine's Day. Did you know that the Breakfast Club turned 40 on February 15th?
I saw that, and I was going to post it on our Facebook page.
It came out in 1985, second John Hughes movie. He died in 2009 at the age of 59. But, I mean, Breakfast Club to me, yeah, Emilio Estevez, Molly Ringwald, Anthony Michael Hall, Ally Sheedy, and Judd Nelson, plus some other cast members, and, of course, an amazing soundtrack song by Simple Minds. Does it encapsulate the 80s any better than that, right?
No. No, it doesn't. And I posted, because last Saturday, I don't know if you saw it on my Facebook page, B-52 celebrated their 48th year together.
And you remember the day you discovered them.
Right, and somebody said to me that if you think of yourself, you know, if you like 80s music, the equivalent now is that if we were in the 80s and you liked 30s music or 20s music.
Yeah. I know. It's kind of like, you know, big band. Like, I love the 40s.
Yeah, I mean, it's an odd thing. But no, The Breakfast Club, you know, I think some of those movies, though, I think they, maybe it's just because of our age, but if you look at some of them, they've held up, but no different than, I think if you watch some of the old movies from the 40s and 50s, if it's a good story, it'll hold up, right? It's like a good sitcom. Lucy will hold up, or the lessons you get from Leave It to Beaver or any of those sort of shows that had a family
but even
or
think
some
of
sort
movie.
Of message.
Think of Now Voyager. Yeah. Think of All About Eve. Think of Mom, you know, Mildred Pierce, like great movies, right? They're decades ago, but they still hold up. So The Breakfast Club, I think, still works as a teenage angst movie.
Does Mommy Dearest hold up?
Better than ever, man. Although one could say, and there's a great documentary on HBO, I think I mentioned this in a previous show, about Faye Dunaway, who played Joan Crawford.
Yeah.
You could say, if you look at her career and all the films that she was in, including Chinatown, one of my faves, she had an amazing career. And then she hits this brick wall with Mommy Dearest. And either it was because she wanted to bring Joan Crawford to life so over the top. Like, do you know, did someone go on set one day and say, you know, Faye, could you go from a 10 to an 8 with the Joan? You know, and like, how do you even calibrate a performance like that, right? Do you? I don't know.
And I wondered. I didn't watch that documentary. That's the documentary about Faye Dunaway. Did you think it was it worth watching?
I liked it a great deal because she's interviewed a great deal herself. And she does talk about hindsight, what the director's vision might have been, what she was talked about, what was discussed off camera. But then just about her as an actress, you get a lot of that too. So I think you should watch it as well.
Did they ask her? Probably not. They didn't ask her about Betty Davis, did they? You know, Betty Davis said she was the absolute worst person in Hollywood to work with.
I don't remember that coming up in the documentary, but I remember when you showed me the clip. She was on the Johnny Carson show.
Johnny
right?
Carson show, yeah. Anybody in Hollywood you wouldn't want to work with, you don't have to say anything. With $1 million, Faye Dunaway. Anybody put in this seat will tell you the same thing. She goes,
anybody
we don't have time to go
in the seat.
Right, we'll tell you the same
thing.
Don't have time to go into all the reasons, but.
And the cigarettes out
she's
there,
on,
right?
Right, you're out. She's unprofessional. She's this. She kept crew waiting. Da, 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 da. And Betty Davis goes on to this 10 to 15 minute rant about Faye Dunaway, and Johnny can't get a word in edgewise. And when it's done, he says, well, you know, she wasn't very, wasn't professional like you. That's exactly what she wasn't. And then Johnny goes, well, we beat that dead horse. He's like, let's go to break.
Let's go to break. Yeah.
But he was probably sitting there the whole time saying, oh, this is gold.
Oh.
I mean, to get Betty Davis to just totally
to go on
shit,
about
shit
the
can't Faye Dunaway.
Who she didn't like acting with. Yeah. That was gold. That was definitely talk show gold.
And oh, yeah.
I just, nowadays, you know, I just look back on that. We had so few choices, right? Of what to watch. I actually prefer it in some ways, right? It was either, you had the three networks, you had one or two late night shows. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Can't go back, Mr. Bennett.
You can't go back. They were saying
boys.
They were saying that about, you know, lots of talk about SNL and their 50th anniversary as well, speaking of things aging.
Yeah, that was another big one.
And often talk about how you and I have made mention many times that the Super Bowl was often viewed as kind of America's last great campfire. But they've also were saying that a little bit about SNL. And
yeah,
they said
I
that
agree.
One of the things that, even though it was done in New York, that they were constantly reminded that you've got fans in 50 states and you need to make sure that you resonate with 50 states. And then they asked the most simple question of everybody and nobody could answer it. And I'll see if you can answer it. What was the theme song to the opening of SNL?
The original opening.
It's been the same one for 50 years. Do you know the theme song? And you're doing exactly what everyone else had done and I did and the artists have done. They've asked the actors of the show, they've asked co-hosts, and everybody said, I know it when I hear it,
I don't
know what it is. Like you, when you know, and you know exactly, right? When you hear that on Saturday night mm-hmm. and the iconic voice of the announcer. And they said it was, so they actually brought the music director on and he said it was supposed to be comedic chaos. And it was lots of horn and saxophone. And he said there actually is a script to follow from it. But a score. And he said, but they're really kind of freewheeling with it too. But it was so funny because everybody said, that's a good question. I don't know.
I was searching for a song. I started playing in my head because I could hear it. And I thought, is there a song? Is there a name to this thing? But apparently it's just the theme to Saturday Night Live, right?
Yeah. And everybody said, I know it when I hear it, but I can't hum it. Nobody could hum it. Nobody could be.
Tim, that's sort of like pornography, right?
I
can't tell you what it is, but I know it when I see it.
I know it when I hear it. I don't know the name of it. I don't know how to play it. I can't hum it, but I know it when I hear it. The theme to SNL. So
classic. All right, sir. Without further ado, or just moving along, what caught your eye this week?
What caught your eye? Here's what Tim and John found.
So mention one of our favorite stores, Aldi, John. The grocery store out of Germany, which we love for savings and shopping and cheap eggs.
$4.67 a dozen. I don't know what you're paying.
I'm paying, mine were $3.29 down here.
You must
cheaper.
Have more hands by you. Or
well, it's, whatever. You know, Maryland, Delaware.
Yeah.
But so this article had popped up. First of all, there's a grocery store right next to Aldi here called Giant, which you're probably familiar with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I laugh every time I shop in there because it's very noticeable. They play 80s new wave music all the time. So whoever the store manager is or whoever's running that store, you'll be in there. You hear Depeche Mode. You'll hear Berlin. You'll hear Joy Division, New Order. B-52 is it's hilarious. I mean, you'll hear all of this kind of new wave, 80s new wave in there. So when I saw this headline, I started thinking, this says, the real reason Aldi is the most peaceful grocery store. It says, next time you're in Aldi and you're picking out the perfect plum or trying to figure out whether you're getting a good deal on avocado or heading down the snack aisle, stop for a minute and listen. What music is playing? How does it make you feel? And they said, but if you're in Aldi, you're going to hear nothing. You're going to hear silence. They said, every few months, people come to this realization. They get on Reddit or they get on some of these sites and they start talking about it. And they said, the only thing you end up hearing is the sound of cans or bottles clinking together,
the
customers
yeah.
softly arguing, the cart noise, or the faint sound of a register up front. And they said, so people have gone to Aldi, and one employee said, they asked the question, why Aldi is there no music? And the employee posted, I literally find myself humming the curbside ringtone at times. He said, I never even noticed that, and he works in the store. He said, I never noticed we didn't have music until my friends came in and said, why is it so quiet in here? Why is it so quiet in Aldi? So they said, there is a reason for the silence. They said, it's all about saving money, and that Aldi made a point of not paying high licensing fees for music. And there's these, there's three or four different companies that control 100 million songs for retail.
The Muzak company being one of them, right?
Right. And there's a big one called Soundtrack Your Brand, which is out of Sweden. And they said that there's a high licensing fee, which, you know, high is relative, but it would cost on average for each store, if they did it, a couple $1,000s a year in terms of royalties they would have to pay. So they'd rather say they'd want to pass the savings along. The Aldi's spokesperson said, no detail is overlooked in Aldi's stores when it comes to saving money for our customers. That includes our decision not to play music. We're committed to passing every cent of savings on to Aldi shoppers, whether it's through our quarter cart system or our Aldi exclusive brands. We also realized we could save money even on music licensing costs. So it was a no-brainer for us. But this other company that does sell, you mentioned Muzak, they did say that they do feel that stores that pick the correct music and correct soundtracks can put people in a proper mood. So there's something called Progressive Grocer, which has done work, and they've tested different types of music and grocery chains. And they said, suppose your grocery chain is organic, trustworthy, progressive, and modern. We will put together a playlist and a track list, which the customer will interpret and be very subliminal characteristics of music that fits that profile, and it will actually make them happier. And we can prove it will lift sales upwards of 10% and put people in a good mood with the music played in the store. So who knows? But Aldi's not playing anything.
Controlling our emotions through music, or if it was a mall, didn't they used to have little centers that would send out scents in front of a store?
Right. No, Abercrombie was famous for that too, the scent of the cologne.
Uh-huh. We were in Aldi this weekend, and when this came in, I didn't expect you to say they didn't play any music, because here's the weird thing. I never focus on that. But when I'm in like Hannaford's, or like I hear, because sometimes I'll hear a song and I'll whistle to it or something. So I'm being controlled by music. Okay.
Yeah.
Classic. Oh, that's great. So I'm still shocked that you're paying like, so we paid $4.67 a dozen at Aldi. We went to our Hannaford's to buy some other stuff. $6.98 a dozen. Well, so basically wow. $7 a dozen. I mean, it's, and we know why. It's the bird flu, and they had to kill these poor chickens and all that.
My mom said in Connecticut, there was one $10.
$10. Eggs. Wow.
$10 or $11. Yeah.
Eggs usually are the cheapest form of protein, but not lately.
So kids are going to be dying potatoes this year at Easter.
You know, you may be right. Yeah, that's my story for Caught My Eye comes from another big box store. It's Walmart. Tim will like this little mugshot here. And the headline reads, a woman is banned from every Walmart in U.S. over sneaky self-checkout trick.
Look at that Dame Edna hair, that purple.
Well, I don't want to be rude, but she reminds me of one of those little gremlin dolls yeah. with the purple hair. You know. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to, like, I don't want to brag.
Well, you know, it's a wig.
What's something? And she's got this purple hair. She's got that smile on her face like, yeah, I got caught shoplifting. This happens in Tennessee. It's a woman who's been banned from every store, every Walmart. Her name is Ashley Cross. She's 37. And she's a known shoplifter. And she was caught using something. She was caught using a barcode for a watch battery to scan multiple items for $1 at self-checkout. So she would probably hold this thing somehow and pick up an item, and the barcode would pick up the same thing over and over. Memphis police caught Cross in the process of stealing a pair of jeans, a t-shirt, some boots, and 11 packs of ramen noodles from a Walmart on Elvis Presley Boulevard earlier this week. How perfect. The total haul was valued at $137.34. Now, you know, earlier in the piece, they say she's caught after doing an epic shoplifting spree. And then later on, they're like, well, the haul was $137.34. Okay. She wasn't working alone. Another woman was with her, and she was charged stealing $57.86 worth of goods, which included two bras. Like, I like the way the reporter put that in there. It was, you notice they put in the 11 packs
two
of
bras.
Yeah, the 11 noodles. Packs of ramen noodles and the two bras made it into the story. She's being held on $7,500 bond, and she's locked up, basically. And she... because of the merchandise value, I think she's being charged with theft or petty theft. I forget what it is. But then the article kind of boringly goes into this whole thing about how people, they're trying to, with the self-checkout, they're trying to avoid this thing where people pick up a barcode they think is like the battery thing, $1. And she somehow carefully, and like, you know, like Penn and Teller, the magicians, right? She does sleight of hand and she keeps passing that barcode over and she gets her stuff. But I mean, $137. She got ramen, 11 packs. Her friend got two bras. It was 50-some bucks. And now they have a record. I don't know.
What I think is crazy about this self-checkout stuff is that you could throw something in another, like say you bought a plastic bowl that was $1.
Or a
you
container, three, like a Tupperware container. You put something
in there.
You could
throw a $30 steak in it, right, and zip it through. I don't, you know, I don't encourage stealing. Certainly nobody wants, you don't encourage shoplifting. But the stores have done it to themselves because if you just opened a couple of more lanes and hired some employees, there's plenty of people that'd like to work, you wouldn't have to worry about all this. I mean, the checkout, I was at Walmart the other day, and they had two or three people standing around at the self-checkout helping people because things get, you know, beep, beep, oh, you need help, you need help, you need help. And I don't know if they've done it up there with you, but Walmart no longer gives bags. So there's, you have to bring
your own bag.
Yeah,
I noticed that the last time I was there. Yeah.
But I thought, you know, it ends up being when some of these self-checkout things end up being more hassle than they're worth. And I can't imagine if the stores have that much theft, which I'm sure they do, that it wouldn't be better off hiring a real employee to cut down on the theft.
A real cashier would probably be far faster. We were at, I forget if we were at the grocery store or it was probably the grocery store. A woman rolls up to the self-checkout with a cart. Practically, it looked like the Grinch's sled with all the packages on it. And she had a baby in the car, and she starts watching her like beep, beep. I'm like, okay, you know, that's one whole thing going to be gone. And then, you know, you have to put the item on that area after it's for the weight, and it starts airing out, and someone comes over, and I'm like, oh my God, okay.
Just I get so aggravated. Yeah, I get aggravated because of that exact reason. You can't put it back in your cart it's got to go in the weighted thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a hassle. I hate self-checkout.
I don't mind it if it's two or three items. We did it at Aldi.
At Aldi because otherwise you throw your stuff in the cart, which I also
did you
don't
notice
like.
At Aldi that a lot of the products have a big barcodes on them?
Yeah, you can't miss it.
Can't right through. I mean, it's almost designed like, oh, this is going to Aldi.
Aldi in Chicago, and it's Japanese technology that they now can, and they're trying it out in a suburb of Chicago. That you would essentially just load your cart up and walk out.
Walk out, and it figures out what's...
It gets everything, and they said it's 99.9% accurate. They were showing Japanese grocery people with a basket of stuff and just placing it down, and it immediately just says it's 15, you know, whatever, and off they go.
So no more scanning. From Ashley Cross stealing 11 packs of ramen noodles, a pair of jeans, a t-shirt, a boots, her friend grabbing two bras to self-checkout. At Aldi and other places.
In Tokyo.
It's a focus group, folks.
Yeah.
All right. As many of you know, Deep Discount is a partner of ours here on Focus Group, and we would very much like it if you would shop at their site by going to rsfocusgroupradio.com and clicking on the Deep Discount logo. A world awaits you down the rabbit hole, and I say that because we know we go there. It's movies, TV shows, records, books, toys, tons of items. And if you want to get a catalog for non-linear shopping, because you could just get the catalog, open it up. It's upper left-hand corner. You could request one. It comes about every 5 or 6 weeks. So this week, we're having a award-winning movies sale. So this would be, of course, as we're leading up to Oscar season, things that have won for cinematography, direction, actor, or even best film. What'd you pick, Tim?
So I was, there were a number of them, certainly because it's award winning. There was a lot of great stuff, but I picked Crash, which I've talked about before.
I remember this the year it came out.
Right. You can get it on Blu-ray for under $7, or you can get the special edition director's cut for under $9, which is great on Blu-ray DVD. And it has Matt Dillon, Sandra Bullock, Don Cheadle, a bunch of other people, but the plot line, covers a 36-hour time stretch, and it's during what they're saying racially and socially tense Los Angeles. And it was actually inspired by the director's real-life experiences. Porsche was carjacked in 1991 outside a video store on Wilshire Boulevard. And so he created this movie kind of based off of this experience he had. And so it has this ensemble cast, and there's 6 or 7 different plot lines, and they all intersect one another. And I just thought it was very well done, although people say it's been done in other movies before, but I just thought it was well done. I haven't seen it in quite some time, and I think with the times we're living in now, it might be interesting to take another look at it. As you said, it was somewhat controversial. The film had received 6 Academy Award nominations, and it said it controversially won Best Picture and Best Original Screenplay. It was up against Brokeback Mountain, Good Night and Good Luck, Capote, and Munich. And they said that they thought, because some of the other movies had homosexual themes, particularly Brokeback Mountain and Capote, that they felt that Crash was the safe choice.
Yeah.
Many people, and they even said that when Jack Nicklaus, he was the one who announced it. They said when he announced Crash as Best Picture, they caught him on camera saying, whoa, like he was surprised it won. But it did beat out Brokeback Mountain that year. And which I also like that movie as well, but I pick Crash.
Good call. It's a good movie. And I remember the editing from this film as well, because it intercuts the stories and they get tenser and tenser as it moves through. I picked something completely different. that's how it works here. I picked a movie called Rango. It's an animated film. The stars the voice talent of Johnny Depp as the primary or the main character, which is Rango. He's a kooky pet chameleon that finds himself lost in the desert. He's tossed out of his little tank when his family, when he's in this family vacation and the car goes over a bump and he falls into the desert. And he happens upon a deserted town, and it's filled with, so the characters are all like lizards and animals. But if you watch it and you're a fan of cinema in general, you'll realize that a lot of what happens in Rango is a takeoff on the movie Chinatown. Water is involved. Someone controls the water. Rango's the hero that's going to release the water. There's even the characters match a lot of the same stuff that's going on in Chinatown. It won Best Animated Feature, the Oscar for that, the year it came out. So I pick Rango, and it's in 4K Ultra HD, and that's 2624. I think it might even be a steel box. And then we do have a new release this week, and it's animated. It's The Lord of the Rings, The War of the Rohirrim. It is a chapter of the world, The Lord of the Rings, that has been brought to life through animation. Set 183 years before the events of the original trilogy, The Lord of the Rings, The War of the Rohirrim. Rohirrim, that's how you say it, Rohirrim, tells the fate of the House of Helm Hammerhead. Hammerhand, the legendary king of Rohan. So if you're a fan, I think you're going to want to pick this up, because it's set in the world that you know so well from Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, but this is 183 years before that.
Wow, 183. It's almost like The Witness.
In Fantasyland, right? Tim, it's a blink of an eye.
Blink of an eye. So again, thanks to our friends at Deep Discount. Be sure to find them by going to our site at focusgroupradio.com. Click on the Deep Discount logo and own your passion. There's an award-winning movie sale going on right now. I picked the movie Crash. John picked a movie called Rango, which I've not heard of before, which surprises me.
Adorable animated film, yeah.
And the new release this week is Lord of the Rings, The War of the Rohirrim. Is that
Rohirrim.
What we're going to say? Rohirrim.
Rohirrim, I think, yeah.
Rohirrim, yeah, okay. Lord of the Rings, the latest in the animated. Right, Lord of the Rings franchise. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got a business birthday and a shop talk regarding our penny. So stay with us.
You're listening to The Focus Group with Tim and John. Learn more at focusgroupradio.com. Now back to The Focus Group with Tim and John. Available pretty much everywhere.
Welcome back to The Focus Group. John Nash with Tim Bennett. FocusGroupRadio.com is our site. You'll learn about us there. Also, our companion podcast, TFG Unbuttoned. And, of course, you can get to our sponsor here on the show, Deep Discount, by clicking on their logo and starting your trip down the rabbit hole. No more waiting. And that's instead of saying, without further ado. I was wondering about saying this. No more waiting. Business birthday.
Everyone does celebrity birthday greetings, but The Focus Group is the only show in the universe that celebrates business birthdays.
You know what popped up today, John? A woman we have done before who was the inventor of the windshield wiper, but we had done
really?
Her before. Yeah. So, but I don't believe we've done this guy before. You've got a better memory than me, but I couldn't find it in our archives.
I don't think we have, Tim. This is new.
So Nicholas Hayek, is I think how you would say it, H-A-Y-E-K.
Yep, Hayek.
Hayek, born today, February 19th in 1928. He died June 28th in 2010 at 82 years old. A Swiss businessman of Lebanese descent. I don't know why they say that, but he was a Swiss businessman. Co-founder and chairman and CEO of the Swatch Watch Group. So everybody knows Swatch.
Just a little watches. Tiny wristwatch, right.
Well, I didn't know much about Swatch. Did you know how it developed? Where
no,
it came from?
It was a desire to make to use the Swiss brand of they're the timekeepers to come up with a less expensive, more fun timepiece. I think that was the thrust.
Yeah, right? Kind of. It was kind of actually by accident.
And, okay.
How he got involved. So he had so as I said, he grew up or he moved to Switzerland and got married to a woman named Marion Mesger. And her father had an engineering company, and he worked for him and did some management consulting work, but then actually became an actuary with Swiss Re, and was well known in terms of putting deals together and working within the Swiss government to put together either mergers or trying to dissolve companies and so forth. So in the early 80s, while he was working, a group of Swiss bankers came to him and wanted him to oversee the liquidation of the last two Swiss watching making firms in the country.
That's interesting.
And okay. I can't pronounce their names, but the abbreviation was ASUAG and SSIH. They were two very prominent, large Swiss making watch firms. And what had happened to the Swiss watch industry is it was essentially taken over by Asia and the Japanese in terms of competition. They were able to make almost identical in terms of quality timepieces far cheaper. And so Hayek, though, believed that the Swiss watch manufacturing industry could be competitive. It just needed to be restructured after he started looking at the operations. So he ended up investing. He bought, instead of liquidating them and trying to sell them off, he ended up putting in 51% and took controlling interest in them. And he said he quickly identified problems with the products, policies, distribution, and leadership. He said each of them owned 100 other separate companies, some big, 100? Some small.
100?
100. Some big, some small, some modern, some backward. He said most of their companies did all their own marketing, their R&D, and assembly. He said it was crazy. So he invested in automation, standardized a lot of parts and tooling, and to produce economies of scale, improve the quality, and allowed production to be centralized. So he restructured the companies all under this umbrella called Swatch Watch, Swatch Watch Brands. So he began to market and produce a battery-powered plastic case wristwatch with quartz movement. It simplified, he simplified the mechanisms down to 51 components. Most Swiss watches had double that. And he then was able to compete with the inexpensive Asian imports. He said the colorful appearance and marketing of the Switzerland-made watch was able to help them regain large market share at the low end of the market that the Japanese and the Asians were taking over. So somebody had asked him, he said what he really wanted to do also was create an emotional brand. And so he, that's why he did colors, why he did a renaming and came up with the name Swatch. And they said, what did Swatch mean or what did it stand for? And very simply, he just took an S and put it in front of watch because S for Switzerland.
That, hey, not a bad way to get a brand, right?
So he took the S from Switzerland, put it in front of watch, and then also in his own mind, he said second because it was somebody's second timepiece because it was cheap, almost disposable, he said, because it was so inexpensive. But it had a lot of style to it and had emotion and enthusiasm. People were enthusiastic about it. Became the world's largest and biggest manufacturers of watches, over $5 billion a year. The Swatch Group now is the largest company, watchmaking company in the world, employs over 31,000 people in 50 countries. They own hundreds of brands of watches, including ones that we know like Hamilton, Harry Winston, Longines, Omega.
Wow.
Dasont.
So they pretty much scooped up a lot of well-known brands under that umbrella,
yes.
Right?
So, for instance, Hamilton, which we both like, they said the last time that was made in the U.S. was 69. Swatch ended up buying it, and now they're made in Switzerland, but it's still an American brand. He died of a heart attack while working at the headquarters. And his son, Nick Jr., has become CEO of the company, and his daughter is also the chairperson. When he died, his net worth was about $3.9 billion. That's it.
Not shabby. Not too shabby at all. For what a cool thing that he recognized going in to liquidate a business, getting to know it and realizing, wait a minute, I could do something
this
with
could
this.
Be and saved.
Turning it, yeah, and turning it around,
yeah.
Ditching the underperforming smaller companies and bad leadership, doing what he did, and then acquiring some of the best known watch brands in the world. It's
yeah. Another thing we missed.
Well,
did we miss it?
I don't, what year did Swatch start? Was it the 80s, right?
83.
Did you have a Swatch?
I had watch. I had a Swiss watch. I remember having a Swatch and it was black. I think it cost $28 or $38 or something. And I still have it somewhere. I laugh at it because, but it was a big thing. You remember?
You could go buy.
People were collecting them like
Beanie
Babies. Beanie
Babies.
Yeah. People were collecting Swatches. Remember?
Yeah, sure. Well, you remember if you could go into the store and like, oh, I like this one. Maybe they had commemorative bands, like it had the Union Jack on, if it was British. It made a statement. That was why it worked. From a fashion point of view, it allowed you to personalize your timepiece beyond just being a nice looking thing. Very cool.
Yeah.
I
had a black one, and then I remember I had a black and yellow one that I thought was very, you know, stylish. That was during the Madonna time, right? She was wearing rubber gaskets and neon, and so.
She's wearing,
was perfect.
Wait, Tim, she's wearing condoms and rubber gaskets.
Rubber gaskets.
Yeah, she was good, yeah.
Neon, yeah, all that. So, happy birthday.
Indeed, good one. All right, as we teased or spoke about at the beginning of the podcast, the penny is being ordered to oblivion by the Trump administration. Many have talked about this for years beforehand because of the cost of the mint spends on creating the penny. It's 3 cents to create one penny. Many of them end up in cookie jars and savings banks. And because they're in circulation, the ones that disappear into people's, you know, jars and things that they're saving, they have to make more of them. The article Tim and I found was by CNN, and it was basically talking about what are the ramifications to the economy of getting rid of the penny. To many, it will not matter, but if you're a cash-paying customer, the store or establishment you're buying a service or product from is going to have to round up or down, probably up. And it means that for cash-paying people, it may end up costing 2 or 3 cents more on average for a purchase, and they wondered if that would be inflationary. I mean, I read this thing and I'm like, come on, we're talking about the penny. But then I found an article over at Inc. magazine, and they were talking about how the penny, and it was a Canadian, well, it's a writer who lives in Canada, but he was born in the United States and raised here and then moved to Canada. He thinks there's nothing more American than the penny, and he has a funny thing. He says that it was created by Benjamin Franklin only a decade after the country itself, and the penny has a motto. Did you know that?
No.
Guess what the motto is? So Ben Franklin, Tim, I'm surprised. Mind your business. It's rife with irony in an era when government seems to be highly interested in minding everything from how we define ourselves to whom we love. I love when writers stick that in. Abraham Lincoln, the forefather of freedom, has been on one side of the penny's design since 1909. It also bears a Union shield symbolizing national unity. Whether it was the intent or not, killing the penny seems to underscore an agenda limiting both freedom and unity. So this guy basically says the penny, even if it costs us $85 million a year to make them, think of it as like a budget that promotes America. But foreign people love, because he said in Canada, they're not so attached. They had something called a loony. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, well, they got rid of the penny in Canada.
The loony, and they had a 2-cent piece called the toonie.
Toonie, loony, toonie? They did.
Yeah,
not.
Isn't that funny? No, they do. Swear to God.
A toonie and a loony? Loony, a toonie. Toonie. Yeah. Is that where Looney Tunes came from? I wonder.
I don't think so, but you know, the Canadians are funny.
That's funny. So they mentioned the Amish and they mentioned some other folks in terms that actually pay in cash. I don't know why they use the Amish. I guess because they deal more in cash than banking.
They do completely. Yeah.
So they said that they would, so, or anybody who paid in cash, if something was $5.16, right? So you would pay $5.16. Well, no, the roundup here or down would be closer to $5.15. Right.
Mm, got it. Okay. And the nickel's still around. Yeah.
But they were saying you would just, it didn't matter if you had credit card or anything.
Correct.
It would still actually be 5.16 because there's actually no hard currency being exchanged.
In digital land. Yeah.
So it's really, if you were paying in cash, it would go up to, so if it was $6.98, it would be $7, right?
Yeah.
But the other thing I thought was interesting here is they said it would take decades for the penny to actually go away, and that what people have misunderstood is Trump just said, let's stop making them. He didn't say we weren't going to use them.
Use them, correct. Yeah.
So they're still going to be there, right? They're still going to be around. He just doesn't think we should make them anymore. So do they become hard to find, and then it just by shortages of them, people will just round up because they say they don't have any pennies? Because a lot of times you'll go into a store and you'll leave your 2 cents or leave your penny and change there for the next person to.
That little tray. Yeah, yeah. The little change tray. Yeah.
And then I was surprised when this article also went on to say that the one coin we should be more concerned about is the nickel, which costs 11 cents to make, right?
Exactly.
So I don't know. I did notice the new pennies. Have you seen the new pennies? They're as light as air.
Yeah. I don't know what the metal content is because it's almost like they're using tin.
Yeah.
And they're painted flimsy. Copper or something. Yeah.
But I think pennies are a nuisance. But when we were a kid, you could do a penny for a piece of bubble gum.
Do you remember as a kid when you would...
Can't do that anymore.
Did you collect them as a kid? Did you save them?
Pennies?
Yeah. We did. We used to have to sit on the floor once a year with those paper tubes.
Go through them.
And count out 50. Remember it was 50 pennies?
Oh, yeah. No, we did that. And then you would take them to the bank?
To the bank. But you have to write your account number on it in case there's a cent or two off, you know. Remember that? Are you kids? You have to put your account number on it. We're like, why? You know, because what if it's off?
Now you could go throw them in the coin machine or something, I guess, and get your money. We have a jar, which I think every house in America probably does.
All our change goes in it.
Throw your loose change in, and you're always surprised about how much is actually in there. But
we used to, back before the pandemic, we used to actually be able to almost guarantee that we would get a couple $100 out of the change jar that we would use then for Christmas tips for the doorman. But now it takes 2 or 3 years to get that because we're not spending the cash.
Do you still do your fives?
I still say, yes, I say fives. And I just went to the bank the other day and on a whim, so there's this guy standing near the ATM and he said, can I help you? And I said, you know, you could really help me if you can get me some $2 bills.
Oh, did you get them?
So he goes, as a matter of fact, we have some. And he said, how many would you like? I said, well,
what do you have?
I got 5 of them, but I should have really gotten 10 now that I think about it. And I noticed something about the bill. When we had Mark Pipkin on, who used to work for the Federal Reserve, he mentioned that the bills often are in circulation for a long time because they're just not, they're not used.
Right, they're not used.
I looked at the these particular $2 bills were printed in 2006. 19 years ago, right? And they're crisp as the day. Like they must have been sitting on a pallet, right? All right, break out that bunch of twos.
Or someone's grandmother gave them to the kid and he saved him and then, you know,
yeah, and in fact, when I'm at the teller window and she hands me the 5 twos, I said, oh, there's a bunch of people in my life are going to be happy for these. She goes, well, I bet that bunch of them are children. I was like, yeah, that's right. So I think that kind of... Go ahead.
You know, that one time you and I ordered, I think I ordered 200 twos or something.
I love that. We both had a stack of those. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like to get them again, but I don't use, I find myself using less and less currency. I'll use my credit card or debit card or something.
I gave a couple of the twos to my yoga instructor, Jade. She has a daughter. Before the pandemic, her daughter was obsessed with, she got a piggy bank once. And I would talk to Jade after class and her daughter gets this piggy bank and I had an idea. I thought, I remember when I was young, my granddad would give me like a silver dollar or a Kennedy half. You know, I went to the bank and the woman's like, no, those are impossible to find. How about some Susan B. Anthony's? So I got like 3 or 4 Susan B. Anthony's. I gave them to Jade and I said, this is for your daughter. And she was learning about money at the time. And the daughter loved the Susan B. Anthony's. She used them. So fast forward, it's post COVID. And I started taking this class again. I see Jade, how's her daughter? And I said, I got something special. So I gave her 2 or 3 of the $2 bills. I said, tell your daughter she has to save one for good luck. Just save it. But she needs to spend the other ones because you got to see what happens when people see it's a, they think it's fake or.
Yeah.
Apparently she takes them home. She gives the daughter loves them. She starts studying the bill. Is this real? Is this real? Is this, this is play money. This is, and she said, my student said, you got to save one. You got to spend, I'm not spending any of it. I said, less Jade, she's a saver already. You know, now I got to convince her to spend it.
Richard gets embarrassed when I try to use them because they do create sometimes a commotion, particularly for the young kids. You know, you go to Wawa here or something. Yeah. Well, they don't know what it is.
Yeah.
They do think it's fake. And then they call over the even younger manager who doesn't know what it is. I say, it's a $2 bill. Don't tell me you don't know that we have them. Well, and then they look, there's nowhere to put it in the register.
No, it was always the case. It goes under the, remember you lift it up where you put the hundreds and fifties. So finishing up with pennies though, it's just one of these things that I think if the government had quietly stopped minting them, none of us would really care after a while. Are people really attached to the penny? I don't think so, right?
No, and this is just, as you had mentioned, and we actually did a story last year about the penny.
Yeah.
And I think we listed the, I don't know, there were 10 or 15 countries that over the years have eliminated using the
small change,
1 cent or peso or whatever you would want to call it. And, but this is another thing of Trump looking like he's doing something, right? This has been
rid of the penny.
This has been talked about for over 10 years or more, maybe even 20 years. And he could just simply say, don't make them anymore. And he, you know, it's another thing, you know, promises kept.
I'm surprised he didn't do anything with like time change. That's been talked about for at least 30 years now, right?
The daylight savings time, that'll be next. Yeah. You know, did you see all the people with the Gulf of Mexico change? You can go on to Google and credit it as a mistake. Uh-huh. And they've shut it down.
Really?
Because too many people were doing it.
It's the dumbest thing. Who even gave him the idea? Like,
it makes no sense. It's just, again, anyway. It's something he could do that was makes it look like he's done something.
Doing something, yeah. You know, performative. So. It's performance art, folks. Okay, that was the penny story.
Yeah, so there you go. So, hey, thanks for joining us here today on the Focus Group. We appreciate the time you spent with us. Be sure to find all our media housed at focusgroupradio.com. While you're there, you'll also find our podcast. And you might notice we've got some commercials that have been put into our show as well. We're on a network called Believe. And if you go over there to Believe, which is a B-L-E-A-V, no E, B-L-E-A-V.com, you'll find another probably 50 or 60 podcasts as well. A lot of them are sports related if you're a sports fan, but you'll find us over there on that network. And you'll find all our programming at focusgroupradio.com. And thanks again to our friends at Deep Discount. There's an award-winning movie sale going on right now. You'll also find them on our website there. Be sure to click on them and start shopping away. This week, I picked the movie Crash. John picked an animated movie feature called Rango. And the new release is The Lord of the Rings, The War of the Rohirrim.
Rohirrim. Yeah. Good. You got it.
Rohirrim. So remember, don't text and drive, arrive alive, and we'll see you next week here on The Focus Group. Take care.
It's The Focus Group with Tim Bennett and John Nash. Accessible on all platforms. Subscribe, like, and rate us on your platform of choice. Learn more at focusgroupradio.com.
That was a stunning focus group.